We'll help you swim, not sink. It's one thing to write a check to a grantee, even a large check. It's another thing to make sure that the grantee has everything they need to succeed. There are many examples where JPB provided supplemental funding or emergency or rapid response grants, supported additional organizations whose work complemented anchor grantees, or otherwise went beyond the check. As Senior Grants and Systems Officer Julio Bautista notes, when we fund a proposal, we are in partnership to make the grant succeed. Going deeper. From time to time, a grantee or a key part of the strategy just needs more attention, more tools, more options. The following two examples don't fit under a neat category, but they provide good examples of trying to do something less conventional. The Energy Efficiency for All Initiative, EFA. This is a story that could just as easily go in the risk category or in the section on learning, but it is perhaps most instructive as an example of a project that threatens to go sideways, but which the funder believes is too important to walk away from. Here, JPB decided to deepen its investment in its grantees by not opting out when the going got tough. The Energy Efficiency for All Initiative was launched in 2013 through a partnership between the Natural Resources Defense Council, the Energy Foundation, and the National Housing Trust, with Elevate Energy joining in 2015. This collaboration aimed to work with local organizations in 12 states to reduce household energy burdens for low-income renters while building relationships with state energy offices and utilities. That work sought to improve programs serving customers who pay into energy efficiency programs through their energy bills, but who do not realize the same benefits as single-family households that can more easily make decisions about ways to implement energy efficiency measures. EFA brings together partners focusing on utility policy, energy efficiency, affordable housing, coalition building, and environmental justice. In roughly its first 6 years, EFA secured $769 million from utility companies and state energy offices to retrofit housing, improving comfort, health, efficiency, and affordability for hundreds of thousands, representing a dramatic return on the foundation's philanthropic investment. While the initiative has produced these important benefits, the going wasn't always so smooth. Partner feedback to the national organizations from November 2020 to February 2021 revealed persistent issues such as power imbalances, coalition mismanagement, and a lack of transparency. These concerns were exacerbated by situations involving the mistreatment of a Black-led organization. Rather than simply shut down the program, JPB paused the operations of the initiative in October 2020 to explore reimagining EFA. The foundation sought input from all partners while continuing to fund general operating support to those involved, most of which had staff solely reliant on JPB's grant support. To address these issues, the team hired Keisha Harris and Associates to help it navigate the complex situation. Harris facilitated listening sessions for JPB with a wide variety of grantees. While it was hard to hear that its funding was enabling bad behavior, JPB staff, including Dana Borland, Barbara Picower, and Janice Hernandez, actively participated in the reimagination process. They also conducted a series of interviews and surveys, leading to a report released in May 2021. The process gave the foundation a better understanding of what went wrong and led to suggestions about how to repair the damage. The report also helped JPB share what they had learned with members of the network. The next step was to put what they learned into action to ensure that their grantees could continue to succeed in the face of the sort of challenge that might otherwise prove insurmountable. Some of those changes included putting a priority on grants to organizations led by and accountable to low-income and/or BIPOC communities, an expanded mission to advance not just affordable housing, but housing justice, energy justice, and decarbonization beyond, but still including energy efficiency measures, ensuring that technical assistance, research, and advocacy support work to advance solutions were developed and determined by those communities, not requiring participating in an EFA-specific coalition if grantees had alternative ways to advance their goals, and advancing anti-racist policies and practices, from grant-making practices to the policies its grantees were advocating. Junior faculty. Over the years, Jeffrey and Barbara Picower donated significant amounts of money to advance medical research, The largest such investment was an initial gift of $50 million in 2002 from the Picower Foundation to the Massachusetts Institute for Technology to create the Picower Institute for Learning and Memory. At the time, it was the largest gift ever given to MIT by a private foundation. JPB has been a stalwart supporter of the Institute ever since, acknowledging the need for continuous support. One particular challenge for medical researchers everywhere involves the early years of their career, especially making tenure at their research institute. To ensure that young researchers have every opportunity to succeed, the foundation helped launch the Junior Faculty Development Program in 2014 to improve the professional journey of junior faculty at the Picower Institute. When a new faculty member is recruited to establish an independent research program, typically at the assistant professor level, they are provided startup funds from their institution. With those funds, they have to buy equipment and supplies as well as recruit and provide salaries for their research staff and trainees. All the subsequent research costs, and often their own salary, must come from grants they obtain from outside funders, such as the National Institutes of Health. Their success in receiving grants and publishing papers determines whether they receive tenure. They typically become eligible for tenure after 7 years or more. Unfortunately, there is a period of vulnerability during years 4 to 7, after these startup funds have been used to establish a lab, but before a researcher has a track record and a sustainable research program. This is especially true since research funding is so competitive. It typically takes multiple rounds of applying before a grant is funded. The program was designed to provide research funding and formal mentorship to early career faculty to help them succeed and flourish through this critical period. An important part of the program includes formalizing mentorship and research support structures. This includes providing junior faculty with opportunities to engage with senior faculty through social gatherings, advisory sessions, and regular one-on-one meetings, all designed to build a more supportive and collaborative community. In these settings, mentors offer junior faculty guidance and honest feedback on key areas like teaching, research directions and funding, promotion and tenure procedures, and how to mentor students. Junior faculty were encouraged to attend workshops and courses to improve their skills in public speaking, leadership, and managing people, thus broadening their professional capabilities. The program has been remarkably successful, with participants highlighting the program as a significant positive influence on their careers, many calling it a career highlight. The accomplishments resulting from the program are impressive. Faculty members have made groundbreaking discoveries in understanding diseases such as Alzheimer's, Huntington's, bipolar disorder, and autism. They have uncovered new insights in how memories are stored, consolidated, and recalled, and how behaviors caused by anxiety are encoded. Additionally, the creation of new high-resolution optical tools and the progress of several therapeutic targets to preclinical trials highlight the program's contribution to scientific progress. Similarly, the JPB Environmental Health Fellowship was set up to support junior faculty researching the combined impact of social and environmental determinants on health inequities in underrepresented communities. Since 2014, the program has fostered over 30 research projects, involved more than 100 students, and produced over 100 peer-reviewed papers. Several fellows have advanced to associate or full professor positions, while 3 fellows have contributed to the Biden administration's equity and justice policy. Collaborating with 32 community groups across 15 states, the program's 44 fellows work to generate knowledge and solutions that address critical health equity challenges. Without the fellowship, these promising academic scholars likely would have been forced to focus on either the social or the environmental determinants of health to remain on a track to tenure. Emergency relief. Many funders simply don't do emergency relief. If it's not a part of their program strategy, they will leave that work to disaster relief organizations. This was especially true when Superstorm Sandy caused widespread damage across several states, particularly in New York and New Jersey, in 2012. The storm hit just as JPB was starting its operations, and the foundation provided $2.8 million in grants to communities across the region, including Barbara's own hometown of Long Beach, to assist in the response and recovery. JPB's general response to COVID-19. JPB moved quickly during the early months of the COVID pandemic. At Barbara's request to her board, the foundation almost immediately authorized additional spending of up to $100 million, understanding that the scope and scale of the problem was not at all clear. What was clear was that this was a moment for philanthropy to move quickly and decisively. The foundation's experience with disaster funding in the aftermath of Superstorm Sandy in 2012 led to its understanding that basic safety needs like food banks would be jeopardized. JPB's response included the immediate and immense task of shifting to work remotely and issuing electronic grant payments. Up to that point, Barbara had personally signed every check that the foundation issued. Program staff made personal calls to all grantees to check in and explore how JPB might be helpful. Staff from across the organization made recommendations for where support might be needed. The foundation converted many project grants to general support, streamlined its reporting requirements, and supported efforts to expand access to the internet, pay for rent and mortgages at childcare centers, and provide legal assistance to prevent tenants from being evicted, among many other efforts. By the end of 2021, JPB made an additional $90 million in COVID-related grants, in addition to its normal grant-making commitments for those years. New York City COVID-19 relief funding. It is almost hard to recall how terrifying and devastating the early months of the COVID pandemic were in New York City. Hospitals were filled. People were told not to go to the hospital unless it was a life-threatening emergency. Thousands of New Yorkers died, unable to breathe, their bodies shutting down. Refrigerated trucks served as temporary morgues in the streets. Schools, businesses, theaters, restaurants, all closed. The streets were quiet except for ambulance sirens and the 7 p.m. communal cheers out windows for frontline workers. Hundreds of thousands of New Yorkers were out of work, with low-income jobs particularly affected. The impact on poor communities was laid bare as they struggled to isolate to remain safe. For those who could not afford internet access at home, it was particularly difficult to get information or to log into remote, a word with new meaning, classes. When the depth of the COVID pandemic became clearer in the early days of April 2020, a group of New York foundations came together to respond. They launched a fund at the New York Community Trust to provide grants and interest-free loans to small and mid-sized nonprofits to help them respond to emerging needs, cover losses associated with the disruption of their operations, and help them continue their critical work. The initial commitment was $75 million, but it soon grew to over $100 million. It was considered a rare moment of very quick action by philanthropy. Darren Walker, president of the Ford Foundation, helped organize the response. "The first call I made was to Barbara," he said. "I told her that we were considering forming a consortium of New York City philanthropists. This group would make grants to organizations in the city, social services, those aiding immigrant workers, and similar groups. The organization serving the populations most affected would be our priority." During that phone call, Barbara immediately said, "Count me in." Betsy Krebs, the VP of the Poverty Program, single-handedly staffed that grant for the year, working with other foundations to review hundreds of grant requests weekly and to guide funding to communities most in need. Funding for researchers during the pandemic. The pandemic was particularly difficult for laboratory researchers whose work required them to be in the lab, given that many universities and institutions shut down nearly all on-site activities and severely restricted access to most facilities. Virtually all non-COVID lab work was put on hold indefinitely. This was challenging in a variety of ways. Many experiments that involved keeping cultures, samples, or animals alive were terminated or suspended. International researchers on visiting work visas saw their immigration status put in jeopardy and were unable to travel, cut off from their families and home countries. Researchers with children or adult dependents needed to care for their family members while continuing their work. Many studies have indicated that the pandemic exacerbated gender disparities in publication and career progress. Many researchers, supported by fellowships with a fixed term, found themselves unable to continue their research and generate the results they needed to publish papers. Some researchers found that their funding was in danger of being eliminated, leaving them in psychological and physical limbo. The foundation responded with grant extensions and emergency grants that allowed researchers to wait until it was possible to get back into the lab, rebuild their experiments, and resume work as quickly and effectively as possible. Responding to climate disasters. In 2017, Hurricane Maria's severe impact on Puerto Rico spurred the Solutions Project, supported in part by JPB, to mount a significant response. This initiative focused on delivering immediate relief through solar and battery systems, water purification kits, and financial support directed to local grassroots organizations. These efforts were crucial in meeting the urgent needs of the Puerto Rican community, both on the island and in cities like New York and Miami. JPB provided funds quickly, helping the Solutions Project to be highly responsive. The success of these initial efforts helped the Solutions Project to incorporate organizations from Puerto Rico into their grantee network. Building on this, JPB helped the Solutions Project to design its Community Climate Resilience and Power Building Program. This initiative helps organizations across the U.S. boost disaster preparedness and develop long-term resilience strategies. It also aims to influence global climate justice efforts, ensuring that strategies are informed by those most vulnerable to climate impacts. Over the past decade, the foundation was repeatedly called upon to respond to weather-related disasters made worse due to human-caused climate change. On average, the U.S. experiences about 10 to 20 extreme weather-related disasters annually that each cause at least $1 billion in damages. In 2023, there were 23 such events recorded by September, setting a record for the number of billion-dollar disasters in a single year. As these events became more frequent, JPB responded to the needs of communities where its grantee partners were most invested. When floods inundated eastern Kentucky in the summer of 2022, JPB moved quickly to support its grantees there. As Peter Hilly, the CEO of Mountain Association, recalls, "We were in communication with the foundation about what was going on here, but we were really, I think gobsmacked is probably the word, when they reached out and said, we're adding $500,000 to your grant to help you respond to this." The additional unrequested funding enabled the organization to set up a program that supported flood recovery loans, providing up to 2 years with no interest, and even covered the initial principal payments for businesses that were struggling to reopen after the flood. They just really listened and understood what was going on and responded, said Hilly. From 2012 until the end of 2023, JPB made close to $20 million in weather-related emergency response grants, mostly for hurricane damage. Addressing the racial reckoning. While the JPB Foundation had been making grants to advance racial justice for many years, the murder of George Floyd inspired a moment in which foundations of all kinds sought to find ways to more deeply address questions of systemic racism. In 2020, a subgroup of JPB program staff began meeting to recommend a set of grants to respond to the moment. As they had many times before, Darren Walker and Barbara Pickauer came together to discuss what their respective foundations could do to meet an important need. As Walker reflects, "Barbara, as a white woman with a lot of wealth and privilege, was incredibly passionate, articulate, and authentic about the need to invest in racial justice organizations and the connection between racism and the bias of the criminal justice system. She was amazing and became one of the largest funders. We had a series of initiatives after George Floyd that summer, and Barbara was on every Zoom call and fully engaged." JPB also joined the Democracy Frontlines Fund, started by the Libra Foundation in 2020. This occurred in the context of the national outpouring of grief, rage, and demand for change after the murder of George Floyd by a police officer, the health and economic crisis of COVID-19, and an election year of unparalleled and historic importance. The fund initially supported 10 movement organizations at $1 million per year, and it has since raised and granted $39 million from 2020 to 2023. Helping organizations be more effective. Quite often, grantees of a foundation identify areas of their own organization that they'd like to improve. Things like increasing diversity, upgrading technology, supporting staff mental health, and enhancing storytelling for fundraising, among many others. And even when they receive general support funding, many are loath to spend that money in these areas because they feel it might be somehow hard to justify it to the funder. Organizational Health Fund. The foundation's commitment to grantees' organizational health has been a signature of its approach, even though the forms that support takes has evolved over time. While the foundation was well aware of the many organizational needs its grantees were experiencing, in 2015, another deeper issue about organizational health that was bubbling under the surface revealed itself. A report by Bridgespan had identified a problem that JPB and other foundations were seeing firsthand. Many nonprofit leaders were burning out, and a dramatic leadership transition was underway. Dana Borland, who had started an annual survey of JPB grantees began noticing this concern in the survey responses. She organized a meeting with incoming leaders of JPB-funded organizations. At Barbara's encouragement, she held a separate meeting of the outgoing leaders of the same organizations to get both sides of the story. It became obvious that organizations needed flexible funding to manage these transitions, as well as additional funding to have the time and resources to ensure that their organizations were healthy, not just financially, but culturally as well. Successful leadership transitions, which have a profound effect on organizational culture, required a great deal of care and were a key part of organizational health. JPB sought to address this challenge by creating the Organizational Health Fund, working with the Tides Foundation to administer the program to help grantees in the environment and poverty programs. The fund made a total of 38 grants totaling $3.9 million as of 2024 and continues to use this vehicle to support its grantees. Tides managed the application process, distributed grants, and was able to make quick decisions to help organizations when they needed it most. Donette Zuniga, program manager in the Environment Program who led the recommendation process within JPB and coordinated with Tides, observed, "The majority of grants went to help organizations to navigate leadership transitions, staff development, and deal with crises." The project helped improve the long-term health of JPB's grantees and helped the foundation gain much greater insight into what their grantees needed most. Hub and network funding strategy. The JPB Foundation understood that complex social issues like poverty can't be solved by single organizations working alone. In many instances, the foundation adopted what they called a hub and network approach to funding. As Barbara wrote in an article for Stanford Social Innovation Review, "Rather than funding one organization and moving on, we place multiple bets on a centrally positioned grantee, the hub, that has the capacity to serve as the issue area focal point for our grant making. We then build a constellation of additional investments around them, creating a network of organizations that work collaboratively toward a common goal. Designating one grantee as the hub increases the reach of core grantees by ensuring they have partnerships with other organizations. Each network organization has an independent mission that complements the hub's goals. The approach fosters a community where these organizations meet and interact, providing a structured space for leaders and other partners to think and plan together, each leading in their areas of strength. The hub and network approach also expands the variety of organizations the foundation can work with in a region or program area. It allowed JPB to experiment with collaborative models and pooled funds and participate in joint decision-making with other funders while taking advantage of what each organization does best. Perhaps without design, the foundation had channeled a similar approach in organizing each medical research consortium with the same philosophy. Each researcher was supported independently, but brought together into a community with a common goal. Community Change Economic Justice Network. The 2008 economic recession pushed the number of people living below the federal poverty rate from 12.5% in 2007 to 15% in 2011, with higher increases in absolute rates for Black and Hispanic households. The Occupy Wall Street movement placed income inequality at the center of public discourse in the early 2010s, and early on, JPB sought to identify organizations that had the leadership and reach to make progress on improving access to safety net programs that keep people out of poverty. Some examples include JPB's safety net portfolio, which evolved from an early focus on specific poverty reduction targets. JPB also made an early large investment in the Center for Community Change, now called Community Change, and set a goal of reducing poverty by a specific percentage over a short period of time. The first project that employed the Hub and Network strategy involved Community Change, a key grantee of the poverty program. Barbara decided to make a grant of $20 million over 4 years to Community Change, but as Jeff Braddock recalls, she asked, "Why don't I fund the broader ecosystem around them to support the big ideas they're trying to pursue?" The foundation then provided an additional $30 million to a set of organizations that could complement Community Change's work. Organizations like the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, Food Research and Action Center, the National Employment Law Project, and the Sargent Shriver National Center on Poverty Law. JPB established what it called the Economic Justice Network, which met on a quarterly to semi-annual basis to share priorities, identify challenges in the field, and when possible, collaborate on responses. The network also funded an evaluation partner to assess whether and how Community Change was reducing poverty in identified geographic areas. This approach helped Community Change progress on its ambitious goals, with network grantees making important contributions to the comprehensive work needed to reduce poverty, including policy development, legal research, and advocacy. It encouraged the organizations to come together, solve common problems, and act in concert to advance social causes. A main focus was protecting and expanding the safety nets that lift people above the poverty line. This included income support such as the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, earned income tax credits, and child tax credits, as well as improving job conditions and quality for the lowest paid workers, including gig workers and minimum wage earners. After the 2016 election, the Trump administration launched a coordinated effort to undermine Medicaid and housing and food assistance. It did this by using the federal rulemaking process and granting waivers to privatize services and curtail eligibility. Community Change and the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities approached JPB about ways to protect the safety net for low-income communities. The group decided to launch a new funder collaborative called the Safety Net Defense Fund to mobilize grassroots voices from affected communities, influential allies, state policy groups, health and human service providers, and other local organizations. The goal was to protect and, in some cases, expand access to Medicaid and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program in their states. The fund provided partners in 26 states with individualized assistance, tools, and opportunities for collaboration. This support ensured that public education efforts were coordinated with national messages, that they would also be tailored for specific audiences, and that state and local groups' efforts were well-timed and fit within a broad strategy. At the state and federal levels, partners preserved access to Medicaid and supplemental nutrition funding by preventing attempts to impose harsher work requirements that might have disqualified vulnerable families. Partners conducted grassroots organizing, collected stories, did media outreach, and educated the public. This helped amplify the voices of people who directly benefited from these programs. The fund provided partners with help that included data and policy analysis, assistance with media outreach and placement, one-on-one consultation for directors and organizers, leadership training, strategy development, and sub-grants to help them finance their efforts. Finally, and perhaps most impressively, Community Change and the larger network of organizations played an essential role in the COVID-era enactment of the expanded child tax credit, which reduced child poverty by 50%. A network to understand and mitigate toxic stress in young children. There are many factors in a child's life that affect whether a child is likely to thrive. One area that has been poorly understood is how violence in the home and community, mental health challenges, substance abuse, or other so-called adverse childhood experiences might contribute to toxic stress in young children. In 2014, Barbara heard the pediatrician and community social justice leader, Dr. Nadine Burke Harris, speak about adverse childhood experiences. She met with Dr. Harris and other leading experts, including the head of Harvard Center on the Developing Child, as well as with community health leaders to learn more. JPB then developed a strategy to provide information about early childhood care systems and to improve public understanding, policy development, and clinical practice related to early life stress. JPB funded clinical measures to identify children, youth, and parents who show evidence of excessive stress. The foundation supported screening tools for early identification of developmental concerns. And finally, it helped establish ways to link early childhood programs and services nationally. While the early grants in this area reinforced the strategies led by Dr. Burke Harris's Center for Youth Wellness, over time, the strategy shifted to redesigning the early childhood system itself. The focus on systems change, driven by community participation, positioned this portfolio area to reinforce other initiatives across the poverty and environment programs. Among other long-term impacts, JPB's investment over these years led to unlocking funds from additional foundations, as well as millions of dollars in government investment across the country. One valuable result is California's statewide initiative to work together across sectors to prevent and address the impact of adverse childhood experiences and toxic stress. Wally Padawaran, who led this work as senior program officer of the Health Equity Portfolio, says we helped transform early childhood programs across the country as we built on the toxic stress grants and supported new approaches that centered families' goals and put the parents in a more empowered position. Fund to build grassroots power. Initiated by the JPB Foundation in 2018 as a project of the Windward Fund, the Fund to Build Grassroots Power is an intermediary fund that helps strengthen grassroots environmental and climate justice groups associated with four national networks: Climate Justice Alliance, Environmental Justice Forum, People's Action Institute, and Power Switch Action. While the concept of environmental justice has been around for many decades, funding for the movement continues to lag. As Dorcita Taylor, a professor of environmental justice at Yale and JPP grantee, has noted, some of the communities that are most in need of funding are the ones getting the least funds to do environmental work. Dr. Taylor conducted a research project commissioned by JPP that revealed that although more than half of the foundation surveyed funded organizations primarily focusing on people of color, less than 10% of grant dollars were awarded to these organizations. JPP sought to find ways to bring more funding to the field and to help deepen the abilities and influence of grassroots environmental justice groups. The work was grounded in the belief that well-funded grassroots organizations, particularly those with ties to national networks, would be better equipped to engage effectively within these networks. This engagement not only benefits the individual organizations, but also fortifies the networks themselves, creating a robust infrastructure for the environmental justice movement. This engaged and connected infrastructure would make it possible for grassroots organizations to wield more power at local, state, and federal levels, ensuring that decision makers heed the voices and needs of communities that have traditionally been harmed by damaging policies and practices. Anna Loiseau served as senior program officer in the environmental program and helped expand the environmental justice portfolio. She notes, environmental justice is a holistic justice movement that is focused on where people live, work, play, and pray. What moves people more than love of people or love of place? As we now see unprecedented national-level investments from the federal government, we can say without a doubt from our experience that place-based wisdom, strategies, and priorities will always be the most comprehensive and sustainable. To sustain this work, the organization hired its first executive director to further organize and institutionalize its efforts. And to date, it has distributed $25.3 million among 136 organizations using funding from JPP and Waverly Street Foundation. These grantees are all members of at least one of four national organizing networks, with leaders from these networks serving on the advisory board and contributing to grant decisions. This relationship between the networks and their member organizations has been pivotal to the success of the fund. It not only supports the fund's objectives, but also reinforces network grantee relationships. Trust for public land, 10-minute walk. As the environment program began to grow, JPP sought to counter the fallacy that the environment is only something that happens in wild, wide-open spaces and that it is disconnected from people's everyday lives. With a specific desire to benefit people living in cities whose neighborhoods were badly in need of quality parks and open space, JPP embarked on a journey to support efforts to improve equitable access to quality parks. JPP made its first grant to the Trust for Public Land in 2014 to help the organization design a vision for connecting people to parks. This led to a larger grant to launch the 10-Minute Walk campaign. The campaign was designed to ensure that all residents in U.S. cities, especially those living in low-income and disinvested communities, had access to a quality park or green space within a 10-minute walk of home. The project had its challenges. The project was initially structured around the hub and network model with anchor institutions playing central, complementary roles. Trust for Public Land was the anchor grantee partnering with the National Recreation and Park Association and Urban Land Institute. However, the hub and network model came with drawbacks, and the initial vision of a nationwide, far-reaching, diverse movement for park equity did not materialize at the time. Several factors were at play. But one of the most important was that Trust for Public Land was undergoing an executive leadership transition, making it an inopportune time for the organization to advance its first ever national issues-based campaign. The scope of the project was extremely ambitious, and the organizations involved were only part of a much larger vision. It proved to be too difficult to integrate the project's many components into one strategy. JPP was committed to making the project work, and exercised patience as the organization evolved, witnessing positive change on Trust for Public Land's board to be more diverse and youthful, monitoring the departures and arrivals of staff, and challenging the organization to solidify its commitment to serving the communities JPP was focused on. The patience was worth it. Today, more than 300 U.S. cities, large and small, urban and rural, across 49 states, have committed to Trust for Public Land's vision to guarantee outdoor access for 100% of residents. The organization has reached more than 9 million people to date and remains committed to its goal to serve 100 million people, including 28 million children who still do not have a park within a 10-minute walk of home.